Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Hi, I'm Ryan LaPlante, and I'm one of the crazy founders of Dumb Dumbs and Dice, the production company that's made the video you're watching or the podcast you're listening to right now. Now, we're clearly busy. We're producing 5 weekly podcasts: Dumb Dumbs and Dragons, Blood and Syrup, The Mythos Mysteries, Warhammer 40,000, The Valentine Heresy, and Curse Code and Crown, as well as 3 event podcasts with miniseries releases scheduled at random intervals: Dumb Scum and Villainy, One Shots, and the bad movie review show, Garbage Town the Movie Podcast. But we want to take this time to invite you to become a part of our company and a part of our Patreon at patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. You can get access to our Discord, access to exclusive DM and character chats. You can get the chance to name characters in our shows. You can even become a recurring NPC and hear yourself interacting with our characters each week through the voice of Tom. You can become a patron for as little as $1, and there's great value for you at even that level. So please join the Dumb Dumbs and Dice family and help us make even more content in a way that you are guaranteed to love. That's patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. So let's do something dumb together, and thanks for being part of our stories.
I am Executron, god of merchandising, and I came into existence because Dumb Dumbs and Dice has its own merchandise. That's a god pun. Get it? Dice? Merchandise? Anyways, you can get t-shirts, hoodies, spiral notebooks, clocks, wall art, throw pillows, bags, and even stickers emblazoned with your favorite Dum Dums and Dice characters and their catchphrases. Go to redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. One more time for the mortals in the back. redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. Get your merchandise today.
Welcome back, children of the night, to Blood and Syrup, a Vampire the Masquerade live play podcast. I am your host, Count Vlad von Lestat, drinker of blood, keeper of the chronicle, and all around a spooky dude. While Iris's side quest continues, the rest of the coterie made their way to Billy Kincaid's hospital room. Greedly talks his way inside while impersonating a surgeon before assaulting a patient to give his companion computer access. Everett found Billy's room before disguising himself as a nurse to hide his face and forehead bullet hole wound. They're closing in on Billy's room, but what will happen now that a mysterious vampire has seen them? Abandon hope, all ye who listen here.
Ridley and Everett, you are striding purposefully down the hallway towards 2 cops who are guarding Billy Kincaid's room. Ridley, you are, of course, dressed as Dr. Beef, famed litigious trauma surgeon. Everett, you are dressed as unnamed nurse, possibly an extra in a medical drama. As you approach the doors, you hear a thin voice behind you just say, gentlemen, he is with us. You may step aside, please. And the two cops just kind of nod and make way. Turning, there is a think like a bit of a Steve Buscemian Boardwalk Empire type guy, but like if he got real into steroids, kind of walking along behind you. So like that height and frame, but jacked. He's wearing an impeccable suit that is very loud in the wrong ways. Like it's not a loud color, but just like everything about it just kind of grates slightly. The shoulder pads are a little too large. He's clearly stuffed into it. He is improbably wearing a coat slung over his shoulders. He just sort of smiles thinly at you with his little John Waters mustache, and says, Mr. Ridley Beef, I believe.
Well, you believe correctly, because that seems pretty knowledgeable. Nice to meet you. And Ridley will just offer a hand.
He kind of looks down, it's one of those things where you can tell that he doesn't, it's that sort of classic germaphobe thing where like he looks at your hand for just a hot second and then his eyes kind of dart up to you and almost imperceptive, but like you caught it. And then he kind of extends and gives you a firm handshake in the way that only super jacked people can, where it's just kind of like he is unaware that it's a vice grip and also doesn't seem to be applying pressure. That said, you're also a hearty fellow. So to you, this is just kind of like the first proper handshake you've had since you got here. He just kind of smiles and says, I believe your friend is a little bit concerned about the well-being of Officer Kincaid. You may go in and speak to her. We have someone to help facilitate for you. If you don't mind, I would like to speak to, I suppose Mr. Ridley isn't exactly correct based on your current guys, would you prefer doctor or perhaps surgeon Beef?
Well, I mean, we're between friends here. I don't think we need to have fake titles between friends. You can just call me Ridley.
Good.
Everett, go on ahead. I'm going to make you a new friend here. So what's your name, friend?
My name is Damian Black. I am here from mutual friends of ours, the Notte Nostra. Ridley, I come with some rather important updates about our clandestine organization and how you fit into it. If you wouldn't mind, I have arranged for us to have some privacy in this room. And sure enough, there is a room. There's a blood splatter against one wall and a crumpled body in a nightgown, along with a bed that has been meticulously remade.
All right. So I think Ridley will just go in to have this chat. He's not going to worry about the mess. That's somebody else's fucking problem.
Oh, absolutely. Meanwhile, Everett, you sort of see Ridley go to deal with this fucking steroided out weirdo. And sure enough, the two cops kind of nod to you. You notice a few details on these guys immediately. One of them has his badge kind of improperly stuck on. One of them is adjusting his belt a lot. You can tell that these guys are wearing borrowed clothes. You can see little, like, perhaps with a sort of fast glance, some flecks of blood on one collar. They both nod to you and grin, and you see fanged mouths before they let you in. Sure enough, inside the room, it's a solo room. It does seem to be a bed that's been pushed into a corner with an unmoving figure on it. The figure seems to be unmoving. There's no medical equipment around them. It looks like it was a two-person room, but it's been cleared for your convenience. Billy herself is in pretty rough shape. She's got kind of her arms and legs up in those sort of suspension pieces. You know, in almost a full body cast. Her face is certainly wrapped. But next to her is a very thin, bald woman who is seems to just be arranging a line of tarot cards along the side of Billy's bed. She is wearing a just kind of a winter parka, which seems a little bit strange at this time of year. But you can tell from kind of how thin and spindly she is that perhaps it's the only thing between her and the elements. As you enter, she smiles, and as your eyes meet, you almost lose your sense of balance. The world just seems to blur almost for a moment and then come back into focus. She smiles kind of warmly and empathetically and just says, I must apologize. I'm afraid my particular brand of well, this, and she kind of gestures to her fangs, almost in like a vaguely embarrassed way, says, leads to some disorientation. I do apologize. It's not an intended effect. You're here to see her? And she kind of gestures to Billy.
I am, yes.
Excellent. She has not woken up in many days, and if the cards, and she kind of gestures to the tarot, just lined out, if the cards are correct, it will be a few more before she awakes, even with the small microdoses of the blood that we've managed to give her. It should accelerate her healing somewhat, but we certainly don't want her to blood bond. That would defeat the purpose, I fear.
And how often are the cards correct?
She just sort of smiles. It almost the way you would talk to a child. Like, she's not trying to be condescending, but it just in kind of one of those, you know, people who are just so certain of something. She just says, always depending on your point of view.
Do I need to introduce myself, or do you already know that as well?
She raises a hand and says, my employers were very clear about keeping a degree of anonymity. They are only interested in your friend, your acquaintance, perhaps, Mr. Beef. You and the rest of his associates, we were told not to pry too deeply into. So I will do my best to remain outside of your understanding. My name is Leela, but perhaps I will just call you the nurse, if that suits you.
Well, since Mr. Beef used my name out in the hallway, I might as well say the name's Everett.
Everett Fry, yes, I was being polite. Please, yeah. Mr. Fry, from what we understand, you have a rather tenuous relationship with Mr. Beef. I'm sorry that he shared his secrets out of school, as it were. But rest assured that we will do our best to keep you out of the affairs of our particular organization. Those not in the game need not concern themselves with the game, as I believe Mr. Beef would tell you. Now, you've come to check on the status of your friend, I believe. She is, if I'm not mistaken, a touchstone of a sort, something that keeps you with a somewhat tenuous grasp on your humanity. Is that fair to say?
Well, gosh, I've never really thought of it that way, but I suppose you could say that. Sure.
That is sweet. We all have those. Although, as time goes on, they slowly, slowly slip away. And she kind of like loses herself for a moment, and then shakes her head and she says, I'm sorry, I was just thinking of those I lost. You mostly know it as a film now, but certain sinking boats stand rather large in my estimation. Regardless, Mr. Fry, Officer Kincaid here will not wake up for a few days, but due to my gifts, I can allow you to speak to her. But we would ask that you do keep it relatively brief. Now, I have been instructed to remain out of this, so I will not be present. You may speak freely with her as you would in a private room. I will merely be the conduit with which you may speak directly to her mind. Is that agreeable to you?
It is certainly not how I expected this to go, but I suppose I appreciate your assistance given Officer Kincaid's condition.
Pray tell, Detective Fry, did you intend to whisper sweet nothings in her unconscious ear?
I came to see if she had come around. I had only heard she was in a coma a while ago. I didn't know if she still was.
Fair enough. Yes, the damage she sustained was rather severe. We are very curious about the creature that did this to her. There have been several of its victims here on this floor. We've ascertained what we can. But if we find out anything more, we'll be sure to let Mr. Beef know. And if it is in his best interest, he will let you know. In the meantime, please. And she kind of extends a hand. And Everett, you're alarmed to see as she does so that her hand seems to lack skin. It seems to just be purely veins and muscle. She says, I do apologize about the surprise, but it is part of my gift, as are the cards, as is this ability.
Before I take her hand, Ever just has one kind of final question. He gestures out the door to the two guards and back to the cards, and he says, all this is because of that beast, or what is your interest in Officer Kincaid?
She smiles and says, we're actually here for a beast of a different sort. We are curious about the monster that managed to dispatch so many outside of Mr. Malone's bar, but the beast we are here for is Mr. Ridley Beef. My employer, Mr. Black, had some words he'd hoped to speak, and we had crossed our fingers that perhaps if we staked our claim here that you would eventually come along, and lo and behold, you have. And she just taps her deck and says, perhaps I had a hint or two. But if you had not, we merely would have kept Officer Kincaid slowly healing until such time as you did come to visit. Mr. Beef is rather hard to find for a rather unsubtle man.
Right. Well, I guess I'll give this a shot if you're ready.
Yes, and she just says, pardon me, gentlemen, the door, if you don't mind. And there's kind of a slam as the vampires close the door. She says, there, now it's just you and Officer Kincaid. And she reaches out one hand and kind of grasps Kincaid's hand. And you can see the sort of web of veins spread out across her hand and start to pierce the skin.
That's gross, man.
It's a world of darkness, baby. And she extends her hand to you.
All right. And Everett will extend his hand.
Excellent. Join us in the blood. And with that, the web of veins stretches across your hand and you black out. When you awake, you're kind of lacking a physical body of any sort. Our Dungeons & Dragons show, Dum-Dums & Dice, Dum-Dums & Dragons, rather, we often talk about mind palaces. That's not the situation here. It's instead like being lost in a fog or a mist. So you can kind of get a vague sense of a Billy Kincaid-esque presence, but it's like looking through smoke. It's very, very difficult to see. But her voice just kind of groans, and she's like, fuck.
Billy? Can you hear me?
You hear kind of a gentle commotion and then a quieter like, fuck. She says, so it's true then, you're one of them, huh?
I I don't know what you're talking about.
I shot you in the head, Everett.
And I fell down dead, you know. Who knows how we're talking?
Okay. So you're not a kindred, you're a ghost. You're some kind of Wraith the Oblivion.
If you're using words like kindred, I guess you know an awful lot that I gave you credit for. Sure, yeah, I'm one of them.
And she just swears under her breath again. She's like, I mean, I didn't necessarily believe it. My partner, McGregor, he kept telling me I was crazy, kept telling me that, you know, vampires weren't real, but, you know, when faced with that much evidence, it's really hard to look the other way. I'd hoped I was wrong. And it's weird to shoot your friend in the head and hope that you killed them. But
that's a hell of a test to administer, Billy, let me tell you.
I mean, the city was on fire there, Everett. I wasn't exactly picking my moments. And clearly you're fine. So fuck me, I guess.
Well, you do look from where I'm standing right and proper fucked, by the way.
Yeah. What happened to me?
You're in a hospital bed. You're in a coma.
Okay.
And there are kindred very interested in making sure that you wake up soon. In fact, they're taking some pretty fantastic measures to wake you up. They're going to ask you about that tussle you had outside of Maydays.
Honestly, Everett, I'm going to level with you. I don't feel great about that or this. I didn't see anything. I shot you and then I got hit by a car.
Well, then tell them that, I guess.
You really think that a bunch of vampires who've been watching me trying to bring me back to life or whatever the fuck they're trying to do are really going to be satisfied with, I didn't see nothing, I got hit by a car and died?
I mean, they say they've questioned other people. I could look into how they turned out.
Everett, you're a fucking cop. You've seen how this goes. I'm not walking away from this.
I can tell you quite truthfully, I have not seen how this goes.
Okay, so
a woman with no skin on her hands is linked to psychically, I guess.
Wait, what?
She was reading tarot cards.
Where's her fucking skin?
I don't know, Billy.
Why didn't you ask her where her fucking skin is? What's she doing to my hand?
Impolite at the time. She was
impolite? Where's her fucking skin, man?
Look, I feel like I took certain steps to distance us from your world. You know, I came to you with cases. I came to you with intel on real, tangible crimes that were taking place. I don't know what you did talking to McGregor or who else you were talking to that got it into your head that it was okay to shoot me in the face to prove that I was or was not a vampire. But you got yourself into some pretty deep shit, too. It wasn't just me.
Tom, the storyteller, is convinced, but Tom, the storyteller who runs the rules of the system, realizes this might be time for a dice roll. So give me a persuasion and I think probably composure. I think you're just laying down the law. You're kind of telling it like it is. You're not wrong. She did shoot you in the head and be like, are you a vampire? Yes, no.
But you are mind trapped within some witch's blood hand. So, you know, there's a success fail threshold here.
Yeah, you're kind of doing a prom thing, you know, like
composure and sorry, what was the other piece?
Persuasion.
Okay, so nothing. Not a persuasive guy.
Well, let's find out. You very well may be, Everett.
You can't roll investigation. That's the only thing that matters.
Three successes.
Look, three dice. Persuasive. So yeah, she kind of like lets out a long breath. And you see kind of the smoky air around you kind of sway with it. And she says, yeah, you're right. You're right. McGregor told me to stop. And I didn't. I kept looking. And I guess that old Pandora myth or curiosity killed the cat, whatever other fucking metaphor you want, proved true. So you're right. This is on me. Look, why did you come here? You're right. You threw me some cases, and I think we did some good, but why are you here? With fucking skinless vein hand lady.
We didn't come together, Billy. She was here when I found you.
No, I get that, but like still. Sorry, that's a lot.
I understand. It's first I've seen of it, too.
Okay.
Came here to check on you when I heard that you were in a coma, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't have a favor to ask as well. Obviously, you're not in the favor-granting position currently.
And oh, I don't know. You want some fucking weird mind smoke? I seem to have lots of that to go around. You can take a to-go bag if you want.
Thanks. Thanks, Billy. And as you were saying, you don't believe you're long for this world after you wake up. You think they're going to, what, kill you once they get the information they want from you?
Everett, have you seen a vampire movie? They're going to drink me or fucking turn me into one of them or do some weird shit.
I'm living the damn vampire movie.
Okay, great. So in your experience, what are they going to do?
Probably ask you questions and wipe your mind. You're going to forget this conversation even happened. I may have to come back again and ask the favor again.
All right. Okay. Well,
there's a whole thing going on where a mysterious death of a prominent police sergeant is not what these kinds of people are looking for.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. You take a doggy bag of weird brain smoke and you show that to me when you come back and I'll remember it. Okay. But look, you're making some sense. All right. I'll tell you what. I was going to ask you to do me a favor.
What's that?
What does your favor require me like waking up and doing stuff, or is it just like a
It's not a please continue to be in a coma kind of favor.
Yeah,
it's
I figured. I thought it might be like tell me who my real dad is or some bullshit. I don't know. I don't know what I could give you, but yeah, all right. Look, I was gonna ask you to unplug me, because I don't want anything to do with these kindred fucks, and I sure as hell don't want to end up as no offense, but you. Looks like that's off the table. And honestly, you're speaking some sense. If their deal is brain wipes, send you on your way, I can live with that.
I just want us to be doing good for the city again.
Yeah.
I got something to kind of help you out with your orphan problem.
Ah, fuck those guys. Okay, look, here's the deal.
Tough nut to crack, and I think I got something that'll help you.
All right.
A very motivated third party who... You know, if they knew that the orphans were responsible for the death of a certain someone, boy, they'd be real helpful in weeding them out.
Everett, I know we don't really know each other that well, but given that you may well be the last person I ever talked person, last thing I ever talked to, unless Vane Lady gets chatty.
Hurtful but fair.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Listen, it's kind of a personal question. Do you believe in heaven? Do you vampires have that? Is that a thing?
I don't know. I know I don't believe in it now.
All right. Well, that's bleak but fair. I do. I was raised that way. I know it's a hard thing to tell people about these days, and it's a hard thing to get behind. But I don't think I could, whatever the afterlife is, if there is one, I don't think I could be happy there. Or if I was in hell, if there is a hell that isn't this, content there either, if I knew I had a chance to stop the orphans and I didn't take it. They've been a plague on the city for as long as I can remember, and they're going to continue to do so. So in the interest of that, I'll do what I can if you can give me that info. But I need you to promise me that if they turn me or whatever the fuck, that you come find me and you kill me. I don't want that. I don't want to live like that. I don't want to be one of those things. But I do want those fucking orphans to pay. And honestly, it'd be pretty fucking great to go out on a high note, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know that.
All right.
I can do that for you. Is there, assuming things don't take a turn for the worse, is there anything I can do for you outside of that as well?
I mean, it sounds like your weird, gross vampire friends are working on waking me up. So that's really my number one right now. You could drop my wife a line, let her know that A, I'm like not good, but not brain dead. That's a concern. She's a pretty scary lady and probably won't be processing this particularly well. So there's a boxing gym near our house. It's called the Silver Glove. You could swing by there sometime, let her know. And, you know, just tell her all the fucking war movie stuff. You know, I love her. I wish she could come home, blah, blah, blah. Just, I don't know, make some shit up. She's not really that sentimental. Neither am I. So, I don't know. Tell her, keep her gloves up, I guess. Would be great if you could tell her that. Beyond that, yeah, just, I don't know, fucking kill me if vampires come after me. That's a pretty big one. I know that probably doesn't seem like much in your world. Also, you can let McGregor know. I don't know what happened to him, but... he seems like a... Wait a minute. Oh, fuck. Is he a vampire too?
Howdy. I'm Everett Fry. I'm taking a little break from solving vampire crimes to talk to y'all about the Dumb Dumbs and Dice Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/dumdumdice, you can support these fine folks that bring you this show and other shows at a number of different levels. Well, hell. For just $1 a month, you get access to the patron-only Discord. Now, I don't know what a Discord is, but it's my understanding that it's a place where a bunch of the fans gather and hang out, and it's quite active. Hell, even some of the cast members show up on there, and they're quite active too. So if that tickles your fancy and is something you'd be interested in checking out, well, just head on over to patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. What the hell's a Patreon?
Dum Dums and Dice would like to invite you to check out their flagship podcast, Dum Dums and Dragons. It's a show where improvisers who've never roleplayed before journey into the world of Dungeons and Dragons. It features Laura Elizabeth as the wizard Alan, Tyler Hewitt as the thief Quinny, and Ryan LaPlante as a cleric named Butthole. Through their first season, these heroes experience the minds of Phandelver, but starting in season two, they step into a world of fully original adventures from the mind of DM Tom McGee. Follow them from the beginning of their quest through 5 more seasons and beyond. Check it out now. Dumb Dumbs and Dragons.
Yeah.
God damn it. He always took the night shift. I just thought he was being dramatic. God. Okay. All right. Well, in that case, if you see him, tell him I miss him and he can go fuck himself. But yeah, here's the deal. I want you to repeat your information. I don't know. Give it to me 7 times. I remember fucking reading somewhere it takes 7 times to remember something. Give me that information 7 times and I'll do everything in my power to clutch onto that and that alone until I wake up. And then even if they wipe my brain, I'll be able to carry that through or not. And I just won't know. And you'll have to come back and tell me all this again. But
I mean, I don't have anything to base it on, but maybe the kinds of things we talk about down here in the mist, maybe they don't go away so easy.
Sure. Well, hey, look, worst case scenario, you just mentioned that gloves thing. It's not something I tell many folks about, so that'll sure bring it all back. But I guess pull up some weird brain mist, you know, ignore the weird skinless chick, and you tell me what you got on the orphans. And with that, Everett, you begin to fill Billy in on the admittedly false information. I need from you, well, I guess here's my question. You're feeding her a lie, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're setting up the death of Dr. Skull as the orphans.
Yeah.
But she also doesn't have any context for any of that. So I think I'm going to make you roll a check for this, but I'm going to give you advantage because she kind of has to buy whatever you're giving. But I do want to account for the fact that Everett's moral compass might fuck this lie up a little bit.
Well, the way I'm approaching it is that it's not a lie that I'm telling her. Mm-hmm. It's a lie that I'm sharing with her so that she knows it's a lie too.
Okay. Never mind then. Yeah.
The lie is that the orphans killed Dr. Skull.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of it is we hate the orphans. We want to get rid of the orphans. This is a very helpful
okay.
way to
never
do
mind
it.
Then. Great. You've just, congratulations. You passed with flying colors. great. Okay. Awesome. So
best role ever.
Really. So you begin to unfold that for her. Meanwhile, in the room down the hall, Damian Black, like kind of perches on the dead man's bed, and just kind of like pats the side of the bed for you. I've never had an issue because I don't drive myself. Other people do because I'm a child. So I sit in the passenger seat all the time, and it means that I've gotten very good at like not trying to make eye contact with drivers. Cause generally speaking, because I can't drive, I'm like, I'm a burden. So let me at least keep you entertained. Like, I'm not going to read or play a video game or whatever the fuck. I'm going to like talk to you and do whatever you need. Cause you're doing the hard work. And the least I can do is be there. It means I've gotten very accustomed to like the side-by-side look ahead and talk. How do you think Ridley feels about the sit shoulder to shoulder and talk thing?
I think Ridley would sit and he's got the same level of personal space as like a child. Like he'll look right at him. He's not off put. I think Ridley gets in a lot of people's personal space to throw them off, but it's not even conscious. He's just so socially clueless that he's right there the whole time. So yeah, he was already sitting down when the pat happened.
Great. Says,
it is, I must say, a pleasure to finally meet you, Ridley. Your friend, Mr. Stone, speaks very highly of your time together on the streets. He says you got up to all sorts of gang shenanigans. He does send his regards.
I'm sorry, what?
This is your best friend from the gang from your flashback episode.
But I thought he was dead, right?
You did, yes. You thought everyone died. I forgot that. But Damien also doesn't know, so there we go.
What? I thought he was dead. What the fuck? He's not fucking dead.
No, he is alive and well and recruiting other people like yourself for the Notte Nostra. He is
So he's the reason I'm fucking like this?
Well, he is not a kindred himself, Ridley, so he was not able to turn you, but he does help identify talent and helps keep our ranks bolstered somewhat.
Well, I don't fucking like that at all, but okay.
I do apologize. I merely meant to remind you of a long-lost friend, not add additional stress to you, as this conversation will be rather stressful enough without that. You see, Mr. Ridley, we have changed things somewhat back across the pond. There has been a slight change in management in the Notte Nostra. Your old handlers, I'm afraid, have met rather bleak ends. Some of them at these hands, but some of them at other people's. You understand the survival of the fittest, I suspect, Mr. Beef. Do you not?
Yeah, I fucking get that. Obviously, this is a room where we don't have to dick around because there's a fucking dead person over there. So, like, why the fuck did you take him out? Were they stupid? Were they turning into cops? I don't know what the fuck vampire cops are, but I assume they're a thing. What the fuck? Why do we go to war?
I'm glad you use the term we, Ridley, because we do hope that you will be amenable to our new change in management. Some of us just saw more opportunity for ourselves to rise through the ranks. You yourself, I believe, were hoping to become the Prince of Montreal, this fair city of dark miracles. Is that correct?
I mean, I'd never say something so gauche. You know, you got to have reasonable ambitions. All I'm saying is I like to aim high, and if I miss, I still land high.
That is a very nice way of putting it. I couldn't agree more. That is, in fact, why I am here. I came as an official delegation from the Notte Nostra. We had actually lost track of you, I'm afraid, and thought you were dead. We were quite pleasantly surprised at Elysium to learn that you were not. Good job. That was very remarkable. However, it was also to test the grounds. You see, we are not particularly pleased with the return of the Prince of Montreal, nor are we particularly pleased with the newly installed King of Toronto, young Mr. Grayson. As a result, we are here to make some rather large moves. And happily, you are a man who is known for making large moves.
Well, don't sit on my hands much, I'll tell you that.
With hands as deadly as yours, that would be a tremendous waste of potential. Ridley, I should tell you before we go much further that you will not be the Prince of Montreal, nor will the esteemed Montcalm. It is in the best interests of the Notte Nostra that I am installed as the Prince of Montreal, and to that effect, we are here to help secure that goal. Now, it is necessary for us to work with Mr. Montcalm for some time. The Marquis does indeed require certain jobs to be done. However, ultimately, it is in our interest to control this mob city once and for all. The Kine mob has had their hand here too long, and it is our time now. So you will be working for us, specifically me, and rather than advancing your own goals, you will be working in service of mine. Is that right. agreeable to you?
Well, what's in it for me, and what the fuck are the goals? Obviously, you want to be prince, but like, what's the structure underneath that?
I believe the structure is that you are, and you must forgive me, I am not great at the turns of phrase of your particular language. I believe the word is my bitch. I will point at things I want destroyed, and you will destroy them for me. I will tell you things I want killed, you will kill them for me. I will tell you that I want particular things obtained, and you will obtain them for me. And you will do all of this with a wink and a smile, because I am your future now, Mr. Beef, and whatever freedom you've enjoyed here is quite done, I'm afraid.
Well, I appreciate the clarity. I think this is going to be a fruitful relationship. I've always been a fan of strong leadership, and it seems like you've got fucking brass balls, Gav.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear you are so agreeable. Your mother is such a nice woman. I would truly hate for my men to have to destroy her. But I do want you to know that is very much on the table. In fact, it is the centerpiece of the table. And if in any way you cross me, she will pay for it limb by limb.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I'd hate to imagine, because, you know, she's getting on in the years, that if something just happened to her, then I'd have to blame you. And that would make such a mess, because I think I would make an excellent worker, you know? I fucking deliver. I fucking earn. But if things are going to get fucking messy, then it's going to be like, nah, you know, you don't want to bring family into it.
Of
so you look after
not.
Her, I look
of
after
course.
You.
And we will indeed. The old Notte Nostra had a rule about families, and it was a little quaint, and that is part of the reason they had to go, as you can understand. But yes, she will be safe and well taken care of as long as you continue to advance our goals here in this country. Eventually, we will need to return to the motherland and deal with certain elements of the organization that are still hanging on rather tenaciously. I have my own masters, as you now have yours. But in the meantime, as long as you are a good dog, no harm shall befall your mother. And we don't particularly care about the company you keep. You may keep this coterie or find a new one. It is really of little interest. You seem to be the most capable. Of course, Miss Dunn seems to be rather useful in her own right. I believe it would be in your best interest to keep her on side, as it were. She can open some doors. Also, it is truly sad, as you know, Ridley, to watch an immortal be ripped apart. And we would hate to see anything happen to her, because a lot could happen over a very long time. So all that to say, this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. Now clean up this room, if you would be so kind, as your friend continues to talk to his pet, and we will have orders for you soon. I understand you are on a mission for the prince, and it would not do to interrupt his duties, but once you have accomplished that, we will be in touch. We have much for you to do. And then he pats you on the head.
Right, I'm looking forward to it, you know? I think I'm going to like working for you. And Ridley just reaches up and pats him on the face twice. He's like, you got a way about you. It's just fucking entrancing.
You just have to promise not to fall in love with me. I'm sorry. That is a joke I saw in a movie once. It is... I find Mr. Tom Hanks very charming. In any case, thank you, Ridley, for being so receptive to the new way of things. The Nota Nostra thanks you for your service. And, well, given that we now know how you feel about Mr. Stone, perhaps you will find a gift delivered to you upon the successful completion of your mission for the Prince. I'll just have to make a couple of calls.
Oh, that would be greatly appreciated, you know? Thank you. Thank you. What a lovely start to a bright future that will last for eternity.
Gonna need a fucking hard deception check there, pal. So this is subterfuge. And I'd give you manipulation or resolve. Because the thing is, based on the way Ridley goes about these sorts of things, I feel like it's one of those, like, it's not a threat, it's a promise situations where it's like, oh, no, I'm not bullshitting you, man. This is going to be great. Until I use you like a puppet.
The only other way I would pitch it is, would you consider a streetwise if Ridley knows that he can't fuck around until he's actually got some leverage?
100%. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Because I was like,
that,
I think
that actually makes more sense than subterfuge, 100%.
Yeah.
This is your.
Yeah, he'll toe the line right up until he can figure out where he could break it.
Yeah. Also, like, there's also something I think kind of fun in the idea that obviously if they're, like, pulling this on you, they're also aware that you're not malleable. So it really is, like, the streetwise check is, like, with the two people smiling, like, spy versus spy, like, shaking hands with a blade behind their backs. It's very much like a, is this agreeable enough that we can both walk away being like, cool.
Three successes, one of them is a 10.
Okay. The 10 will put you up and over because that counts as two. So good work. You need two 10s to count as two. So you have three. Ryan, I'm going to get you to push this. What would Ridley say? You can tell that he isn't fully convinced. You're being a little too malleable. What would Ridley do to try and seal the deal on this?
Before we go any further, though, I'm going to need proof of life on my mum.
He kind of like looks at you and goes, oh, yes, of course. It is natural to miss one's mother. I think I remember. One moment. Well, perhaps would you like to dial the number? And he hands you a burner phone.
Sure. Say it out loud and I'll fucking punch it in.
Oh, you do not have her number. That's fine. We will use mine then.
So he puts that phone away, pulls out an iPhone and just like very quickly, like thumbs the thing in. We see there's a brief exchange where he just says,
Ridley would like to see his mother. If you wouldn't mind just pointing your camera. No, you have to hit the little arrows that point in a little circle to flip the camera. Oh, no, we are still seeing your face, Brendan. Brendan, I'm still seeing you. There you go. Okay, now point it at, thank you. There you go. And he turns the camera around and you can see a sort of like a bungalow, just kind of in what looks like a suburban neighborhood. Your mom is just like, the sun's just starting to go down. She's out on the front lawn, just fucking giving it to someone who has slightly blocked her driveway. Like, even at this distance through the window of a car, you can just hear, like, I don't care if you're delivering for fucking Amazon. Like, there's just this whole, like, tirade. And she's just in, like, an incredibly, like, plush, like, bathrobe over just, like, fucking ratty, ratty, ratty negligee. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, very much your mom, where it's, like, the cozy piece is very fancy, and then everything else is just kind of whatever she's got. She doesn't look harmed in any way, but there is very clearly a car kind of on call. Can you roll me an awareness and wits, please?
Two successes.
just beyond her, you can see kind of a large gray shape. And I think, because obviously you're playing the angles, as soon as you identify that this is now, that your mom is clearly alive, I think you do that thing that like Liam Neeson does when he gets taken, and or when he's talking to his daughter about being taken, and I believe Taken One, where it's just like start counting your breaths, like I need all the things, you know, before he's like, throw a grenade on this parking garage and I'll know how close you are.
Movie one, where he tells her all the things she needs to scream while she gets kidnapped.
As opposed to movie two, where, you know, grenades, come get me and Xenia on a top out of here.
Yeah, 15 cuts to climb a fence.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of step stools involved. So you start trying to take in as many details as you can. And unfortunately, the car is just like a standard fucking shitty rental car. Could be anywhere. Last time you talked to her, you told her to kind of get the fuck out of Dodge. So she could potentially be anywhere. You clock that the sun is going down. And as you focus on the grayish shape beyond the house, you could swear it's a mountain in the far distance.
Okay.
And then he says, thank you, Brendan. That will be more than enough. Also, Brendan, in future, when I call you, please read the user manual on your phone. This is very embarrassing for me. I'm doing a, you know, we'll talk about this later. And he just hangs up and he says, you know, again, the adages are true. Good help, terrible to find in most places. I believe that is how it is said. In any case, as you can see, your mother is doing quite well. Although she does seem to be rather angry with the delivery person, which does not seem to be their fault. Are you contented with this?
Well, I mean, as contented as one can be. You know, you like to be sure of the situation you're in before you commit in any real direction.
You see, that little hint of rage is what I was missing before. I was worried you were going to just play that this was all fine. I understand it is stressful, and I do apologize, Mr. Beef. This is not at all what we wanted. I just understand your loyalty to the previous ways. So thank you. You have proven to me that you do, in fact, understand, but also that you will help because you understand what is going on. So, when your friend is done talking to his human pet, you can leave unharassed. I will give you one of my burner phones. It is like exchanging business cards for our kind, yes? Here you are, and I will reach you when I need to. In the meantime, good luck with your mission. I hope whatever the prince has asked you to do is not too taxing. I myself must go and see if I can secure a corporate sponsorship for him. It is not fun, but it is what has been asked of me. So it was a pleasure to meet you, and I am going to go attempt to get us a deal on rental vehicles. Goodbye, Mr. Beef. We will talk soon.
Bye.
With that, he leaves, and as he goes, he kind of like looks to the cops to make sure everything's fine. And when they nod, he just kind of nods at them and goes to make his way out. Everett, you finish telling Billy what you need to. And Leela distends the veins, just kind of sucks them back into her hands. And she says, were you able to communicate properly with your friend, Mr. Fry?
Yeah, I think so.
Good. By our accounting, it should take another few days, then she will awake. We can certainly let you know if you would like, or you can just track her down at your convenience.
Say, this is a, you know, this is an important person to me. I'm just worried about, you know, when you're done with her, what happens.
She smiles sadly and says, Mr. Fry, you are perhaps too newly turned to fully understand the role of kine in our ecosystem, but the reason they are called that is because they are as cattle to our kind, ultimately. This one, and she kind of like strokes the side of Billy's face through the cast, revealing a quick glimpse of like the veins, she says, this one matters to you now, but when you've lived long enough, they'll all just be faded memories. as far as I know, there's no ill intent toward her, but I also am not exactly high up the chain here. It is the vampire mafia, sir, and what they choose to do is rather beyond my ability to intercede. That said, from everything I have seen so far, they seem committed to bringing her back. They are very curious about this creature that attacked her, and, well, the others all went stark raving mad before they could respond.
Come on, why would you wait till now to tell me that?
From what we understand, she is perhaps the most aware of our society. It would seem the anarchs and their like have ruined the masquerade enough that she might be somewhat aware. I think it might mean that she can actually understand what she saw. Am I incorrect? Should I tell them?
No, she's got a firmer grasp on things than the average person.
Then she should be fine. Depending on the card, of course. And she taps the deck.
I don't suppose cards could shed some light on that right now.
She smiles and says, of course, I would be a tremendously bad medium, I suppose, if I didn't draw a card for you. She begins to shuffle the deck and she pulls a card, which I'm going to grab from a randomizer. Let's determine the fate of Billy Kincaid, shall we?
Jesus Christ. This is terrifying.
She flips the card to reveal the Seven of Wands, a card of large import, to which she responds with kind of a sucking of air through her teeth. She just says, I'm glad you had a chance to speak to her.
What? Wow, what is that? I thought it would be like hearts or spades or something. What is that?
Goodbye, Mr. Fry. And she picks up her deck and leaves.
What? Did I see what it was?
It was the Seven of Wands.
Yeah, I saw that as well. Okay. Yep. I was just going to commit that to memory and try and figure out what to do with that.
So with that, you, and also I'll say, like, Everett, based on the people you know, I mean, obviously you could Google it, but you really feel like Dederick is probably someone who, like, knows tarot pretty well.
I was thinking of asking Sorka and Fiona as well, maybe.
Also a good bet. Okay. And Mr. Ken might have, like, the weird Reddit version of it. So you have a few different angles on it. Dederick can probably give you the pop culture one. Sorka and Fiona can give you probably the more spiritual side of it. And Mr. Ken can give you, like, the r/tarot version of it.
Okay.
Having heard this ominous card read aloud, you step out into the hallway to join Ridley. And in silence, the two of you make your way to the elevator where you finally have privacy. As the doors close, you have your first moment alone together.
Everything all right with you and, what was it, Mr. Black back there?
Oh, no, it's pretty fucking bad. So he took over the Vampire Mafia. He claims I'm going to be his servant now and he's got my mum. So a bit of a fucking disaster there. On the bright side, he's fucking stupid. Like, he's very dangerous. Very dangerous. Stupid. Because in the business, what we call men like him is he's an hammer, you know? Comes in, fucking crushes things. However, when you're an hammer, everything looks like a fucking nail. If he'd come in and said, I killed your old boss, you work for me now, build a little kingdom, I'd have fucking done it. I talked to the lady for fucking 10 minutes and I was on a plane and I'm here. Basically, just running out of fear. If he promised me anything, I'd be fucking loyal. However, he kidnapped my fucking mum and said he'd kill her if I wasn't his fucking bitch. I'm going to rip his fucking balls off and shove them so far up his ass, he'll taste his own fucking balls before I stake him. But short term, I'm going to have to fucking play the game. Now, I'm going to test. I'll test him. He told me I had to clean up a fucking dead guy in a room. No, I didn't do it. And the reason why is, he is how I get fucking clever. If he hurts my mum because I didn't do a fucking chore, I know he's a cunt and he'll kill her anyways and I'll fucking slaughter him. But if he gives me a lecture and he threatens to hurt her, then I might be more fucked because it turns out he's clever. And if he's fucking clever, this could all go to dog shit. I'm going to need you and a cops. We might have to deal with fucking DeSantis and try to get him to give me some private military contacts. I don't know. I watched a fucking documentary on that Blackwater shit and they seem fucking mean. Fuck.
All right.
How's Billy?
This episode of Blood and Syrup features the voices of Ryan LaPlante at The Ryan LaPlante on Twitter, Tyler Hewitt at Tyler_Hewitt on Twitter, Megan Miles at Maggie Miles on Twitter, and storyteller Tom McGee at McGeeTD on Twitter. This episode's sound was edited and mixed by Laura Hamstra, and all of Dum Dums and Dice's logos are by Decapitated Markers at Decapitated Marker on Twitter. That's MRKR. Our theme songs are What's Really Going On Right Now by Chase Allen Willis and Traffic by Angle, and all our ads use the tracks No Control and Chiefs by Jazzar. That's JAHZZAR. All of their music is available on freemusicarchive.org. When it comes to Dum Dums and Dice, you can visit our website at dumdumdice.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are at dumdumdice and on Facebook at facebook.com/dumdumdice. We've also got merchandise at redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. And most importantly, you can join our Patreon of Darkness at patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. Sleep well, children of the night. Spooky.
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Menicola, Long Long, the Half-Blind Prophet, James Cuellar, Charles Grams, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, One True Artistry, Orion Birchfield, Lorda Bradovic, Noel Lewis, Scott Garland, Anthony Griffin, Chet Awesome Laser, Jordan Neesmith, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, Taryn Hefner, Cade Peters, Richard Cranium, Christian Mendez, Anna Zed, Fire Unfriendly, Logan, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.